Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikaias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing great. Happy to be here. Excited. Just excited in general. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce. Always a pleasure to be here with you. Hashtag Big Fry in the building.
This is awful.
Man irresponsibly ordered six large fries instead of actual food. We'll talk about that at a later date. But did you eat all the fries? Like, what happened there?
I got a refund on my Postmates order because
you went full K word on them.
I did not go K word on them. However, I don't like this bit at all. We're cutting the cord on this one very early. But no, just for some background, over the weekend, I was hungry late at night, so I decided I'm going to Postmate some McDonald's. Judge my food choices at a later date. At any rate, I ordered some McDonald's. Like, let me get a nugget meal from McDonald's. And instead of getting a nugget meal, I got four large fries. And I look at the bag and I'm just like, I feel like I'm being trolled. Because I don't know how you confuse a nugget meal with four large fries. And so, like, first I try to call McDonald's, like, hey, is there something I can do about this? And, like, I don't get an answer, which is like, okay.
First off, you tried to call McDonald's late at night?
Yeah, like, it just, you know, in hindsight, I'm just like, you know, that's probably a waste of time. But, you know, closed mouths don't get fed, or they get fed a bunch of fries, apparently. So I don't know.
That is a pull-up jumper with 19 on the clock that hit the side of the rim.
I didn't love it. At any rate, just a lot of French fries. I didn't like it. Anyway, the NBA released the list. This is the 75th anniversary of the league. So they listed their 75, well, really 76 greatest players of all time. It ended up being just the original 50 plus 26 names being added. But among the list, did anyone stand out to you that surprised you that made it? Any snubs on your end?
Well, the first thing I'm happy is they kept the original 50. And they built on that. I thought that was the right move to make. I'm glad Dominique Wilkins got his due. I'm glad Bob McAdoo got his due. I was a little surprised with the amount of current names. I'm not sure why, but it makes sense since the 50 had a blend. And if you're going to expand it, you might as well honor the guys now. So seeing someone like Dame get a nod was pretty cool. Those kind of things. I like that. Dennis Rodman, Gary Payton, you know, showing the respect. As far as snubs go, I know a lot of current players are hot. Clay, Draymond, you guys will be there in 25 years. Don't you worry, pals. don't you worry. Dwight. I was on the fence with Dwight. I feel like Dwight turning into a clothesline machine probably got him off this list. The antics. It's his resume. I mean, his resume is his resume. But he'll probably get added on. I thought Manu might have made it just because of his overall impact, winning championships. I guess maybe T-Mac. But it's top 75 all time, so I can see how he might get moved. But he's really good. It's a top 75 list. All these players are great.
That's true. Like, Trace McGrady is my favorite player of all time growing up, so, like, I would love to see him on the list. I understand why he didn't make it. I did not get the Dwight Howard erasure because the resume speaks for itself. And I remember I can't remember who sent out the tweet. And I ended up including the stat in the article that I ended up writing about it, him being snubbed at basketballnews.com. So check it out if you haven't already. But I think Dwight was one of 33 players in NBA history to have at least 8 All-NBA selections in their careers. And of those players, Dwight Howard was the only player not to make the list. And I'm just like, how does that happen? 8 all-star teams, 8 all-NBA berths, 3 defensive player of the year awards, like, led a team to the finals, wins a championship. And it's just like, that's an easy top 75 case to make. Like, at a certain point, just say you don't like him, which, I mean, that's your prerogative. But, like, don't, there's no basketball argument against him not making the list.
Is this Bill Walton slander?
I don't think it's Bill Walton's slander. Do not align me with that opinion. I see the trap that you're trying to set. I am going to dribble away from it. I'm going to make the outlet. We have a 4-on-3 now. Absolutely not. I am not being aligned with that. At any rate, Dwight's case is, well, I thought he was airtight, but he didn't make the list. So it was just weird to see, like, while it's cool to see, like, Anthony Davis acknowledged or Damian Lillard acknowledged, I'd look at the resumes from all three guys, and I'm just like, Dwight has the best one. So I'm not sure how those two were added and he wasn't. Like, they're deserving, but Dwight was more deserving is the way that I would phrase it. So that was really the biggest one that stood out to me. Like, I hear the case for Draymond. I hear the case for, again, like T-Mac talked about a little bit earlier. Kyle Lowry's another interesting one. But, again, like, Dwight was a top 3 to 5 player at his peak. There's no reason for him to not make that list.
Probably recency bias. Probably fell through the cracks. And you talk about maybe adding some guys who had played, trying to get your current guys in, he probably just slipped right through.
It's unfortunate, but I don't know. I guess there are more pressing issues in the world than getting upset about.
I personally did not expect Dwight Howard campaigning at the start of this podcast.
You know, like,
it's a new day. I'm excited.
It is a fact to do that. Like, I feel like half of my Dwight Howard discussion is like, why does he foul so much? Why is he doing this? Why is Dwight Howard the way that he is? And then also, like, again, Dwight Howard in totality is a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I think it's fair to acknowledge one side of it while also acknowledging the other side of it. And it feels like only the Dwight's annoying side was acknowledged when making this list. So I don't know.
Tell you what, this man has mastered the antics, though. We'll say that.
Daddy has.
I don't know how he does it. Every year, he adds a new wrinkle. Which is kind of cool, because the thing about Dwight was, hey, he probably should stop trying to do all this stuff offensively and just realize screen, roll, rebound, and he did that. But then he was like, I'm kind of bored. I'm going to just be a heel all the time. And he won a ring. The Lakers like, hey, chill, man.
Like, I'm like...
He honed his tactics and came back ready to go.
There we go. Like, love is too strong a word, but like I appreciate the shift in which it feels like the first half of his career is like, I want everyone to like me. And then people started disliking him. It's like, wait, why don't y'all like me anymore? Please like me. And now it's just like, you know what? I'm just going to hit people. If this is what it is, cool. I'm going to hard foul. I'm going to shove people on your team. I'm going to shove members of my own team, apparently. With him and Anthony Davis getting into it for whatever reason. Just the Dwight Howard experience is an interesting one, but still one that deserves to be recognized as one of the 75 greatest players in NBA history. Anyway, we are past opening week of the NBA season. I have a lot of thoughts. I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts as well. It's that sweet spot where it's way too early to make any kind of firm conclusions, but also like everyone's kind of in it right now. So it's just fun to watch basketball right now. I'm having a lot of fun with the season right now.
Very fun to watch basketball, almost too fun. I'm trying to watch everyone because this time of year, I'm like really intrigued by certain teams. And, you know, my eyes always go to the teams you don't really know about quite yet. Like we're trying to figure out. And there's a lot of those teams right now, mm-hmm. but they're all kind of fun. So it makes it hard to land on a rewatch for me. So it's like, wait, I want to watch the Grizzlies and Lakers, but I also want to watch and see what the Cavs did, but also the Hawks. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'll whittle itself out, but it's just been fun to actually have basketball, actually have things to discuss and dive into it. It's been a really interesting start to the year. Like, it just feels, you can feel the continuity thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked mm-hmm. about in the offseason as far as teams bringing their guys back and running it back and just trying to go for it. It hasn't been the most fun start for those teams who, A, are trying to learn how to win, or B, are trying to figure out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing the up and down play. You're seeing close games. You're seeing blowouts. Like, it's just, it's all over the place. So it'll be fun to see how we think now versus how we think as the season progresses. And, you know, it always, every year it's the same, but it's always fun to feel this way. You know, eventually we'll whittle down and there'll be certain teams I just won't watch for a month and not tell you about. And then you'll talk about them on the pod. And then I will briefly discuss a pick and roll coverage and move on.
You're giving away the secret sauce. I'll let you kick things off. What teams have caught your eye in a positive sense?
It's a whole lot, but I guess if we're going to go a deep dive, I'll go with the Warriors first. I've been very impressed by what they have put together. Obviously, the winning helps, but just if you're thinking about what we wanted or what they needed to do to maybe hit another level or make some noise in the West, they've kind of done it. Like Steph Curry going bananas helps a lot, but offensively, I've loved what they've done. There's more efforts to get Steph in those two on the ball scenarios, whether it's in pick and roll or off down screens, but it feels like there's more of a purpose to it. It feels like there is more pick and roll, but it feels like they're doing it more organically within their flow rather than just kind of forcing it, which it kind of felt like at times where, hey, we're just going to run this and spam this. And it didn't necessarily feel natural. Now they're kind of getting more movement, forcing the defense to move, not letting them load up. And now you can kind of still do what you want to do and still get the pressure if you need to generate it. So it's kind of Warriors-esque. I thought it was, to me, I always imagined Steve Kerr looking and being like, you know what, we need to do more of this, but I don't want to do it that way. So, hey, Kenny Atkinson, how'd you do all of that? But no, I've really liked the balance of the Warriors team. I think Jordan Poole has been really good to start. Obviously, he's getting shots up, but his play has been key. His aggression has been key. And I think he just opens things up for that lineup as far as being able to play different guys at different times, as far as having another guy who can handle the ball, make shots, you can run action with off ball, can operate with the ball in his hands. I think him doing what he does allows Andrew Wiggins to just kind of be Andrew Wiggins. Mm-hmm. Which is important, as opposed to he needs to be defensive, score points, make decisions with the ball in his hands. He can kind of have more of a natural fit and play off of what's happening, which I think is key. I think Draymond obviously is Draymond. He's been great defensively. I feel like you know the Warriors are in a good place when he's just pushing the ball at an insane pace off rebounds and makes. But also when he's in the half court pointing and yelling at everyone and he doesn't scowl afterwards and like they actually like do stuff, like that feels like the biggest sign the Warriors are in a good place. But it feels like a team that knows who they are. You know, when you look at the guys coming off the bench, you look at the lineups they can generate now, as far as you start big, now you go with Draymond and Bilicha, then you go with the bench straight up. Like you can do more things. And you get the payoff with Poole, with Lee. You get solid guys like Otto Porter to be able to play defense and space the floor. It just feels like what they're trying to do is more natural. The movement has been great, ball and player. It's just been fun to watch so far. I've been pleasantly surprised by how quickly they've been able to put it together.
It's been a seamless transition. Like you talked about with, you know, knowing who you are, finding identity. Like they are leaning more into what made them not just very good, but what made them dangerous. Like, I think them being able to get into more small ball alignments helps them. Like, not to say that Kevon Looney hasn't been good when he's been on the floor, because he has. Like, the screening, the chemistry that he has with Steph, with setting the screen, or you receive a handoff, kind of handle things above the break, and then flip back, flip his hips, get a guy contact, rolls to the basket, whatever. But when they're able to go Draymond at the five, or when they're able to mix in be elites at the five, when they're able to play those two guys together, like, everything just seems to make more sense now. I feel like there were a lot of moving parts for the Warriors last year in which you wanted to have some of that beautiful game. This is stuff that we talked about on the podcast last year, where they want to have the Steph kickoff possession, kick it off, he relocates, you get the regular hand back in the corner that you're used to seeing during that title run for them. And like Kelly Oubre couldn't get it down beginning of the season. Andrew Wiggins couldn't really find the flow early. And so now it's another year in the system for Andrew Wiggins. You're replacing, you know, Kelly Oubre with, you know, an Andre Iguodala who isn't as good as Oubre is right now, but knows Steph, knows the system, just has that IQ and feel that Oubre doesn't have in that type of environment. And so things just flow a lot smoother. Even when you have the Juan Toscano-Anderson minutes out there, like he's adept at making those quick decisions on the read. It's been such a joy to watch the Warriors operate, you know, will flow after Steph gets trapped in any kind of scenario. Because Steph is drawn two to the ball no matter how he's shooting. And just to see the ball ping around the way that it has throughout the first three games or so for Golden State, like it's really been a joy. I've been impressed with what I've seen. Also, Jordan Poole just has no conscience. And I don't know how I feel about that yet.
I thought you would be team Poole by now, but I think it's funny that he has no conscience and is enabled and asked to do that with what the Warriors believe in offensively. And how much better that looks than someone else who had no conscience last year.
This is true. Like, it's, Jordan Poole has been good on balance. So I don't want to take that as a, I don't want that to be taken as a negative. It's just funny watching him, like, in the minutes with Steph off the floor, he'll come up the floor. He's pulling a 30 footer. Like, there was a possession in the, I want to say the Lakers game in which he takes a 30. It was the Clippers game, excuse me, in which he takes a 30 footer, knocks it down. Early clock pull up from D, knocks it down. Very next possession, does it again and airballs it. And I'm just like, this is going to be Jordan Poole until things kind of stabilize for him.
I think that's fun that he's allowed that kind of freedom. Yeah. You know, I think that's a good thing as far as fit and knowing your guys and knowing your personnel. That's important for a team. You know, you mentioned just the fit. It's always, we always talk about how guys look different in different places. Iguodala may not be better than X, Y, and Z, but for that team, mm-hmm. he provides them a lot different value defensively, offensively, knowing where to go, how to be, where to be in the right spot, those kind of things. If you look at a guy like Nemanja, how different he looks in Golden State compared to his last few stops where teams have been searching for this, but he's had to be the gravity in a sense. He's kind of had to be the floor spacer. And now he has someone who can space the floor for him. And now he can just make plays. And like, it's been cool to watch Draymond and Curry just kind of initiate him into those unspoken word plays where they just do something and then he's right there as well. Like, oh yeah, all right, I got it.
They're just playing basketball out there. It's great. Yeah, like watching Bielitsa carve up teams in like short roll situations and comparing that to him just being a spacer slash pick and pop guy in Miami. Like, it's just night and day for him. Like, this is such a great fit for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's, fit is so important because you may have the skill set, but your skill set may be used in a different way. So the things that you could do don't pop the same way because we don't necessarily need that. We need this from you. So that's always something fun to watch. But yeah, I'm salute to the Dubs. I'm impressed with how they've handled some adversity in these games. You know, mm-hmm. Laker game looked like they took a punch. Clipper game, they took a punch, but they were able to bounce back. They've got to continue to work to make sure they stay consistent with their style of play because it does feel like sometimes they get into a lull and they kind of stop doing what got them to the dance. But I think with more time, they'll get there. But yeah, fun stuff from the Warriors.
Love watching the Warriors. Speaking of a fun team, I'll go to the East Coast. The Charlotte Hornets are incredibly fun. They're also good right now. They did lose. We're recording on Monday night. You know, new podcasting schedule. But they did lose to the Boston Celtics in overtime tonight. But they had their first 3-0 start in franchise history. LaMelo Ball, they're, I just don't know what else to say about him at this point. That man is from the, he's a genius in the half court, just a genius passer. Instinct of the pull up, he's comfortable with the pull up. He's getting more comfortable in the mid range area. And he has weapons around him. Like, Miles Bridges looks like he's taking a step. You know how violent he is as a play finisher. He's doing more stuff with the ball. We're seeing more of the passing flashes. We're seeing more aggressive drives, some more nimbleness, some more craft as a finisher from him. Gordon Hayward's back. He's sprinkling in that three-level scoring whenever they need it. Ish Smith might be he's not the sixth man of the year candidate. You shouldn't have a sixth man of the year front runner like a weekend. But Ish Smith has been very good for Charlotte coming off the bench, just pushing the pace, timely buckets. The pull-up jumper, which looks weird, is going right now. We'll see how long that lasts. But he's still getting to the rim whenever he wants to. I am enjoying virtually every part of this Hornets team. I can't really get with the big man room right now. But outside of that.
Nah, that's direct. That's direct shot at Mason Plumlee. That's not even slander.
There have been a lot of direct shots at Mason Plumlee throughout the first week of the season. But.
Wow. All right.
I had to throw it in. No, like in all seriousness, I'm still trying to get a feel for Mason Plumlee with this team. Because in theory, I understand what he provides. Like, he is a good screener. He is a guy that you could run some actions through in the high post because of how well he passes the ball. And defensively, he knows where to be in the drop. It's just been very hit or miss with all of it, though. The finishing has been very hit or miss. In the Celtics game tonight, at least two goaltends, just barely missing out on some blocks there. But it's just been an experience. And with Mason Plumlee,
Mace is Mace. And the good thing for Charlotte is he has the role and he has the opportunity. And with minutes, you can get the best out of him, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like even when we had him in Brooklyn, we had him starting over Brook Lopez for a while. And people were looking at us sideways, but it was like, this is how we get the most out of him. Like, we're going to get the most production and the most good stuff if he's consistently engaged in those things. I like what he does as far as adding a drop to their defense mm-hmm. and taking away some of the forced rotations that they got themselves into. Now, they're still active. They're still all over the place sometimes. Don't get me wrong. But if he can kind of lock in and being a little bit more solid in that area, and they can navigate more screens, they'll take more pressure off of them. It feels like, and this probably isn't the best night to say that considering what they give up, 140, but it feels like there are more possessions where their opponent is fighting the clock rather than missing shots, mm-hmm. which I think they have size, they have length, that they can just lock it down as far as not having to fly around all the time. They'll be good to go. But I like Mace. Mace is not going to be the Blake Griffin of this year, by the way. I'm not doing that.
I'm not going to force you to defend Mason Plumlee too much on the podcast. But like it was just, that was kind of a question mark for me heading into the season, as we talked about during the Southeast Division preview pod. I guess you just feel it a little bit more tonight with PJ Washington out with an injury. And so now it's Mason Plumlee and you're relying on Nick Richards too. With, to his credit, Nick Richards looked pretty good tonight coming off the bench.
This is very so we'll dunker. See. This is a very dunker spot, but Nick Richards, I was impressed. Hey, those weak side rotations, blocking shots at the rim, little switching activity, some communication. I was impressed. That those are the things that can get you at least 6-8 years in the league if you do them every night.
There you go. Nick Richards talk on the podcast. This is exactly what the dunker spot is for. But it's the center room and it's just the defense in general. I do agree with you. It's nice for them to have a little bit more scheme versatility. Again, that's going to be reliant on whoever's at the five. That's Plumlee, that's Richards. If Carey gets some burn, if PJ Washington comes back, I was surprised that he's coming off the bench this year. That was not a lineup change that I expected. So we'll see how he, we'll see how he fits in that role. But if either of those guys kind of hold up in the drop and give Charlotte a little bit more to do, as opposed to we're switching everything and we're going to mix in the zone and then we're going to throw up our hands if none of that works, that would be a positive. And, you know, to their credit, like the wings are flying around. Like Kelly Oubre has been mostly fine defensively at the point of attack. He's made some nice plays off ball. LaMelo Ball looks like he's taken another step as an off ball defender. Timely rotation, timely digs. He's playing the passing lanes. Miles Bridges also doing that. So it's going to be interesting to watch them because they blitz teams in transition already. And they have enough guys on the perimeter. Like they're still trying to incorporate Terry Rozier at this point. They have enough guys that can knock down shots offensively. So if they can hold water defensively, like this is going to be a team no one wants to see.
They can score. They are more fun. I owe them an apology. They were my favorite team to watch last season. I had a lot of questions coming in, and they are fun. And you can hear it in that crowd. That crowd is loud in Charlotte. Yes. They're excited about the basketball that they're seeing, and that's a good positive step for them. I am intrigued. I have a couple questions for you. The first one is going to be, and Miles Bridges has taken a really big step, I think, offensively mm-hmm. with his aggression, his mindset, making plays off the bounce, being involved in more actions. Can they develop him and PJ Washington at the same time, or is this going to be a one or the other?
I would think that they would be able to develop them at the same time because it's interesting. Like both of those guys are kind of gap fillers in a way. Like I think at his best, again, I've been impressed with Miles Bridges doing more stuff with the ball, but I think at his best, you want him attacking a scrambling defense. You want him cashing in on catch and shoot opportunities. And shot very well from three last season. It's continued into this season. But you kind of want him doing that. And for PJ Washington, you want him doing the same thing, like picking pops. You want him taking open shots there. If you send two to the ball, LaMelo, you want him attacking downhill, picking out cutters or picking out shooters or, you know, finishing in that, you know, that 8 to 10 foot range because he has the touch for it. So I think with both of those guys being play finishers at their best, and you're putting them alongside a Gordon Hayward that can make plays for you and LaMelo Ball, especially, like there's room for both of those guys to kind of settle into roles and thrive at the same time. I don't think it has to be one or the other. My only concern there is like, if the center thing just becomes super untenable, Because at that point, it's like, all right, fine. So who's the best at the four? And Charlotte is starting Miles Bridges right now. And so in that case, it's, okay, can we move PJ before we have to pay him? Can we move PJ for a more of, you know, four or five that better aligns with where we are right now?
That's fair. I, you know, for me, it's always just fit and opportunity. And sometimes one guy gets ahead of the other, and that's just kind of how it goes in one spot. So I'm interested to see if they can get some juice out of both of them, because Bridges being this good helps elevate them. And if PJ Washington can add to that, now you have a lot to cook with, or a lot more to cook with. My next question was going to be, do you have any concern about their offense in close games? We just saw the loss to Boston where they had control, lost control, got control again, and then fell apart late. Mm-hmm. Fourth quarter, it's hoping Gordon Hayward makes a shot. It's hoping LaMelo makes a shot. It's they missed Terry Rozier tonight.
Yeah.
And it was very clear in the fourth quarter that they didn't necessarily know where to go to get a bucket. They were kind of in that hope and wish type deal. It kind of reminds me of the Grizzlies last year. As they progressed, sometimes those fourth quarters were an adventure because they were trying to figure out, okay, well how do we win now? Mm-hmm. Do you have any concerns about them in those type of games?
I do think there are some kinks to work out. As you mentioned, like they do miss Terry Rozier. Like he missed beginning of the year, came back, and now he's out again. So that's another guy that can just knock down a pull-up for you at the end of the clock. I think my concern is similar to last year in that regards, where it's like, okay, who is the rim pressure guy on this team? And I'm not sure who that is right now outside of Ish Smith.
I'm about to say Ish Smith.
And so, like, I mean, Ish Smith cooked at the end of the Brooklyn game on Sunday. So, like, he can give you that on a random night. That's not – you don't want Ish Smith to be your clutch guy. I'm sure he wouldn't mind it, but that's just not where you want to go if you have, like, serious playoff aspirations. And so it's encouraging that LaMelo is getting downhill more. Like, he drew a lot of fouls in fourth quarter and overtime. But, like, he's still trying to find his way in that area of his game as well. It became, particularly in the overtime, it became kind of a switch / mismatch hunting thing for him, where he's picking out Robert Williams and he's trying to boogie on him in that way. And so he's still trying to find the balance between, let me dictate this matchup, let me get to my spot, let me get to the rim, let me draw help. And this is, you know, this is year two for LaMelo. So like, he's not supposed to have it all down right now. But if it's not LaMelo, it kind of has to be Gordon Hayward. And if Gordon Hayward can't get to the rim consistently, and Boston has, they do have wing defenders. The defense, we'll talk about Boston a little bit later. But there wasn't a natural, like, pocket for Gordon Hayward to attack tonight, which I think led to more of the pull-ups, more of the contested shots, more late clock shots for Charlotte, because there just wasn't anything obvious for him to attack in that way. So I think that's where you're going to feel it a little bit. Just that, the lack of rim pressure.
That's fair. But still a fun start. For them to be where they are right now, it's pretty fun. How do you feel about the Bulls? I'm ripping up the format sheet because that's what I do best. You have any different thoughts about the Bulls? Is just they haven't played anybody? How do we feel about them?
Like, I need to watch more Chicago before I have, like, a super firm opinion on them. I will say, from what I've seen of them so far, like, the defense does look good. The caveat with that is that they have not faced a good offense yet. And so I do want to see, because they're playing Vucevic a little bit higher up than I anticipated, and trusting those backline rotations behind that. So I want to see what that looks like against a good team. Because when you're playing that aggressively in pick and roll, like, there are pockets to attack there. But, like, Detroit with no Cade is not – they're not going to attack that consistently. They're not going to be able to take advantage of that consistently. Toronto is not a team that's going to be able to abuse that in the half court, not consistently. So, like, I want to see them against – I want to see them against a solid offense before I get super excited about the defense. But it is encouraging that they're kind of winning with the defense right now, because they're still trying to work out some obvious kinks on the offense right now.
No, yeah, they're winning while figuring things out, which is always important. I bring them up just because I'm very intrigued by their week ahead, where they play the Knicks on Thursday, I believe, and then they play the Jazz this weekend. And those are two games I want to see what they look like in those. If the Knicks can kind of challenge them offensively because of the Knicks defense and what the Jazz could do to them and to test that defense. So yeah, think of it as a preview for next week.
Gotcha. It's a quality teaser. Yeah, the Jazz one is going to be circled on my calendar. I need to see what that's going to look like. Who else has caught your eye?
I mean, geez, I feel like everyone's caught my eye. I love what Memphis has done early so far. They haven't always gotten the results. We'll talk about their big dog here later, but I like the Steven Adams fit. I think he's been really good for them as far as screening, rolling, rebounding, defending, playing his role. I'm still not used to seeing him in a Grizzlies uniform. I don't think I ever will be, but mixing in some passing too. It's been fun. Your guy Melton is cooking. Does not want to go back to the bench. Yeah, watch out the lane, man. Desmond Mane.
Oh, there it is. The people are clamoring for it.
He's on fire. So they seem fun. I love that I picked them as the 4 seed because I forgot the division rules.
I mean, you got to stick with it now.
I have no choice. I was eagerly awaiting the graphic to come out so I would never forget it, but I think I missed out. So I'm good. I can just claim it never happened.
We'll make sure we post the clip on the Twitter account and make sure it's saved and all of it for me. Oh, goodness. I feel like I'm obligated to bring up the Timberwolves for week one because why would I not bring up the Timberwolves? The defense looks pretty good so far. They also need to play some more offensive talent to see how real it is. But I like that Karl Anthony Towns is playing pick and rolls a little bit higher because I was tired of seeing him in a drop. It's something that we've talked about multiple times across this podcast. I'm glad that's not a thing right now. Josh Okogie is stuffing dudes into lockers, which is fun. Patrick Beverley's bringing impact on that end. It's been fun to watch them on defense. Offense is a different story right now because they just have not been able to make shots, which is weird. I would imagine that's going to correct itself. So I'm going to be curious. You know, I'm curious to see like what that's going to look like when the offense gets better and when they face better offensive talent, like how far the defense slips, if at all. But I've enjoyed the early returns on the Timberwolves.
Glad you have. I'm going to break up everything on this pod and breaking news, Ricky Rubio and Campazzo getting to a spat right now.
That sounds about right.
Sounds like the beef we never knew we needed.
Campazzo and Rubio. Like, Campazzo had to start it, right?
Oh, he tripped him.
Now, there it is. Okay.
FIBA Ricky was not having it.
I respect it.
Yeah, back to the Wolves. I'm only concerned because of the lineups that they present together. We talked about it kind of in the preseason pod. Not that they don't have talent, but it's a lot of guys who are similar and it's a lot of guys who may not be able to produce consistently offensively. And so I'm being basic. I'm looking at the box score for tonight. You got 10 for 23 from Edwards, 10 for 24 from Karl-Anthony Towns, 3 for 14 from Russell. That's a lot on those three. And can they put enough lineups out there to make it easier for them? Or are they just going to have to live with nights like these, you know, where maybe the assists aren't as high as they need to be, the shot making isn't quite there, and you kind of struggle through it. Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, you would like to have a Malik Beasley probably show up. Or maybe it's going to have to be Pat Bev. But I want to see if they can find the right pairings to kind of open things up for them. And I'll keep my eyes on the defense because obviously it appears what they're trying to do is having an impact and an effect and keeping Cat consistently at the level. You know, A, it makes his job simpler, and B, it locks in the rotations for the weak side so they know what they have to do. Now, they have to do it every single time if you're going to commit to that. Mm-hmm. But making it simpler, doing your job, gives you an opportunity every night. So we'll see if Minnesota can hold up.
That was just – and I'll say one thing about – because they've been starting Josh Okogie to start the year. The one thing about their lineups and playing Cat higher is it puts a lot of emphasis on everyone else to rebound, and the rebounding hasn't been very good for Minnesota early on. So that's going to be an interesting thing to track moving forward. But again, I'm impressed. Like, I'm glad that they make more sense on defense. And again, like, I don't think this is going to be like a top 10 defense by the end of the year, but I think the scheme fits their personnel a little bit better, and that gives them a better chance to end up slightly below average. If you get slightly below average with a good offense, with the kind of offense talent that they have, then that's the formula for them to kind of make the play in and make that kind of push. So we shall see. How do you feel about the Wizards?
Well, my Wizards agenda got hurt because they got blown out by the Nets. I like what the Wizards have done so far this season. There's something about what they have. They got a group of guys that I think can blossom. I don't know if they're going to be world beaters at all, but they can compete. What Spencer Dinwiddie has done, just taking on right off where he left off, especially the game he had against Indiana. I think Beal was out that night, and he looked just like he did in Brooklyn. That's big for them. Kuzma has looked aggressive while not giving up all of the little guy things he did. Montrezl Harrell looks, again, like the guy we knew him as, which has, I think, been important, especially when you have a big combo of him and Gaffer that you can now go with. That's good for them. I think the bench just has more of a consistency, more of a base. They have more lineups that make sense, and they can generate more movement. They can generate more points, and the defense is going to have to come, but it's been able to hold a little bit stronger than most thought. So I am intrigued by the Wizards. They are my secret team that I like, them and the Cavs. I just love the Eastern Conference. I'm going to say it right now.
There we go. Get your Cavs talk off, because you've teased the Cavs like three different times already in the pod. What intrigues you about this Cavs team?
Everything. They've played three big lineups. They got Ricky Rubio running the show, which I am convinced that they only brought him in because of Kevin Love just being upset with everything. Like, I feel that they were like, hey, okay, so he's not going to start. And we're getting Markkanen in here. And we drafted a big. So he's still cool with Ricky? We can go get Ricky, right? Yeah. He can play Ricky for about 6-7 minutes each half. That'll be fine.
Oh, there you go. You kill two birds with one stone. You placate Kevin a little bit since you can't trade him right now. And Ricky Rubio is a better backup point guard than like Matthew Dellavedova. So you actually get some competent backup point guard play.
Wow, this man Deli is just chilling somewhere, and he just took a whole stray.
Is he chilling? Is he? Has he ever chilled? Has he chilled once? I don't think he has. But no, like, the Rubio has been very good kickoff this season. And it's even more important because Darius Garland's missed time early on. So, like, the fact that Rubio's been able to kind of plug in to keep the chain moving there, it's been very important for Cleveland.
Hey, you never have to answer the Sexton Garland playmaking question if Ricky Rubio just does it.
This is also true. This is very true. Anyone else?
I mean, I could go on for days. We can move on to the teams that need a name for this segment. teams that makes you go, boom, pay that man.
There, there we go. Quick nod to Miami's defense, which has been pretty darn good in the early goings of the season. But yes, teams that make you go, like Boston won tonight, but they're my number one team right now. Because the defense has just not been where I thought it would be with personnel that they have. Like, Robert Williams has been kind of a mess in space. Al Horford, when he's been available, has been tasked with switching, and it hasn't been great. Like, Jason Tatum hasn't been super locked in defensively, which I expect that to pick up. I think he's just having one of those early season random spurts right now. It was nice to see him just kind of go off tonight against Charlotte. He really had the shot going, knocked down some threes, knocked down some tough side steps and stuff, got to the rim. So the offense coming around, I would imagine he's going to have some better defensive effort. But, like, that's been weird. I'm just trying to find what Boston does consistently. Like, the defense hasn't really been there. Offensively, they're still not getting to the rim consistently. And that's with the addition of Dennis Schroeder. So, like, team-wide, that still hasn't been there. They've just been a funky watch for me so far this year.
They have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. That's what they do well every night. Jaylen Brown taking a leap, by the way. Sheesh.
The handle looks better. And that's opening up everything else.
Now, the question is, how much of what they do, and we asked the same question last year, I think, how much of what they do is going to translate to pressure that opens things up for their teammates? And for me, with Boston, it's less about the talent and more, can they build something consistently? Bench lineup wise, what do you got? Is Jabari Parker going to be your best guy off the bench? Like, are you going to need Grant Williams to produce shooting wise like he has early this season? Where is Josh Richardson?
I'm trying to hold on to Josh Richardson to stop, but good Lord, man, you got to make shots. You got to make shots at some point.
So it's just like, it's a team that's trying to figure out their identity. And just like we talked about, this is, it's a tough time. Some nights they're going to look great and some nights they're not going to have it. I think Robert Williams has shown a good amount of big man defense, good amount of rebounding, good amount of rolling. But now, can you integrate him into being a switch guy? Can he guard guys in space and still hold his help defense responsibilities and recover and keep the ball in front? You know, can you get the pressure from Schroeder with the starters? You know, because those two guys are going to need the ball in their hands. Tatum is making quicker decisions. He's been tough. But how many shots is he going to have to take? Can Schroeder get in the lane? Can Marcus Smart find ways to contribute without some of the Brad Stevens plays? You know, that kind of deal. They're kind of a work in progress. And so I feel like it's going to be really up and down until they can find that, kind of hit their rhythm, or at least get someone on the bench to start producing.
It would, I guess we'll just have to see. Like, I wish there has to be a way for them to generate a little bit more rim pressure than they do. Because, like, Dennis can't be it. And I think, especially tonight against Charlotte, like, Jason Tatum did get downhill a little bit more. But you just want it to be a little bit more consistent. Like, I just want that to come together. And I think, one, like, if you could just consistently have Robert Williams and Al Horford healthy, I think it'd be easier for NBA Udoka to figure out, like, how often can I play these two together? If they do play together, what defensive coverage am I running with them two on the floor together? And if I'm splitting them apart, how are we balancing the scheme versatility there? So just having them consistently should help on that front. But I don't know. Like, they've just been weird to me. And the other team I had was Brooklyn, which, again, they got the win over Washington tonight. But it's just been a lot of weirdness in Brooklyn. Like, the defense hasn't been great. The offense has not really been able to generate consistent rim pressure either. There's been, you know, some chirps around James Harden, him not getting to the free throw line, how much the rules play into that, how much of it is him, whatever. I feel like he's leaned a lot on the floater this year. And we're working with now a 4-game sample. So, like, this isn't a big sweeping conclusion or anything like that. But he has leaned on the floater quite a bit. He's faced two very good defenses early on. And he's seen different coverages that are taking away some of his easier reads. So I'm not super concerned about James Harden. But, like, his weirdness offensively has contributed to their slow start this year. And so I think, one, you got to see what's up with Harden. The Kyrie thing is kind of hovering over all of this, but at this point, it's fair to expect him just not to be there for the foreseeable future. So the Harden thing is going to be something to track. What lineups they put out is going to be something to track. They changed the starting lineup this year. They pulled out Nick Claxton. He has not been good to start the year, which hurts my heart. But
oh, wow. I forgot to tell y'all early in the pod, Nekias has returned back to his white tank top form. Okay. Some would call his most powerful form. And
I don't know about that.
After 17 episodes of arguing about Brooklyn bigs, he has stated Nick Claxton has not been very good. And I'm confused, folks.
What is that to be? Like, I could think that Nick Claxton is their best option, especially long-term option, while also acknowledging when he's not playing well. He's not playing well right now.
Doesn't fit the bit.
I'm sorry to disrupt your bit, but I still very much believe in Nick Claxton, but he has not been good. Like, I certainly understand why Steve Nash, like, you know what? Let's go with Blake. Let's get some more Bruce Brown out there. Let's do some different things. Let's switch it up a little bit and see if we can get something else to work. Cause this button right now is not working.
Long time listeners. He just said, I could fully understand how he went with Blake. We have come a long way.
Okay.
I think with Brooklyn, probably if we had to list a disappointment offensively, that doesn't feel like they've had that same kind of rhythm, that same kind of force. from last year. Even we saw it in the preseason as far as spacing and just being able to generate that kind of pressure on teams. It's kind of felt very A to B to C at times, which you have the talent and that's going to happen. But I think they'll work out the kinks there. I think lineup-wise, they're just trying to find their way, which is important because they're going to have to figure out exactly what's going to be their best groups. But they're definitely trying to play a lot of guys. You know, we talk about that big man room. It's really crowded right now, you know, to the point where Bruce Brown wasn't even playing and it caused an uproar, which I never really understood. I think it was pretty clear Steve Nash was trying to see, hey, what do I really have in these guys? What combinations of these guys are going to work? I know what I'm going to get from Bruce Brown. I know what he can do. We enhanced him as a quote unquote big. We know what we have there. You know, what are we going to get from Paul Millsap? What are we going to get from James Johnson? Who can they play with? You know, what's LaMarcus look like on that 99 out basis? How's Blake going to look? Those kind of things. They're trying to answer those questions. And then bench wise, you have just a few guards who could contribute, you know, between Javon Carter and DeAndre Bembry. I mean, there's minutes there. They can contribute on both ends of the floor, but which one do you go with? You know what you have in Patty Mills and what he can contribute. And he's been on fire to start this season.
Yes.
So for me, with Brooklyn, it's can they get their offense back up? Can they find their lineups and then build the consistency there? Consistency there. Apparently, I can speak. Jeez. That's one of those things where I'm just trying to figure that part out. And that's the questions I have with the other team I was going to talk about. But I think Brooklyn will be okay. They're just going to have to figure it out here early, which, again, is tough right now because the league is hungry and there's a lot of quality teams out there.
Yep. Like they're one of the teams, like, we kind of know who they – it's a weird thing with Brooklyn, which we know who they are with the kind of top end talent that they have and the role players that they added. But they're also very much trying to find themselves still. Like, they have a lot of – again, they added a lot of talent over the offseason, drafted some talent over the offseason. And so, you know, we know what the expectation is with Brooklyn. And I think, you know, with Kyrie being out, that kind of throws some of the hierarchy out of whack. And now you kind of, you know, when they made the Patty Mills signing in particular, that should have been luxury for them. And in a way, it still is. But now it's like, okay, we need Patty to kind of be the spark plug so he can take some of the pressure off of Harden or off of KD when the other is on the bench. So you kind of need him to be that number two when he was never supposed to be that. So, like, it's just, like, again, there's I don't have any long-term concern about Brooklyn. Like, you know where I stand with them in the hierarchy of the East. But, like, I don't think anyone should be crying like the sky is falling because they're, what, 2-2 right now. Like, that's not a big deal to me.
Well, where do you get to this team I'm about to talk about?
Who are we talking about, Steve?
We are going to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Go ahead and get them out the way so we don't have to talk about them for another month.
All right. How do you feel about the Lakers starting?
I think there are just some clear things they have to figure out, and you can see it. You can also see the potential if they do figure those things out, but there are some question marks. And I think this is a team that generally has a base they can rely on. You know, they usually it's either been defense or, hey, we can score, we can figure some things out. The lineups aren't quite there right now. They're figuring that out. The half-court offense isn't quite there right now. They're figuring that part out. And the defense isn't quite there right now. So really the only thing they can lean on is LeBron and AD. The rest they're trying to figure out on the fly and incorporate a lot of different pieces. And that's going to cause some games where it's going to be tighter than it should be, or maybe you end up losing one as you try and figure these things out. I still think the potential is there, but they got to gut it out for a little bit. You know, I think one of the things, and I know you're going to go on a DeAndre Jordan rant at some point this year. But I think, obviously, we know the Lakers' philosophy as far as wanting to start big and then flow into 80 at the five to have that have more impact. That's clear. That's what they want to do. It gives that lineup more pop. The one thing I didn't expect was for the bench lineup to become 80 at the five, which I think is a smart move. Now, the only question is, can they make those pieces work together? Because now you have a bench lineup that has talent, but how are you using all of them? You know, so you have 80 at the five, but you have Rondo. He kind of needs the ball in his hands. He can push, which is great. Ball handling adventure sometimes in pick and roll. You have Melo, who's Melo, and you can space, but he's going to need the ball at some point. How do you use him the most? You have Malik Monk, who can score, but how many on-ball reps is he going to get? Is he really a pure spacer? Is he really that good off the ball? You are also trying to get Russ involved. So how do we push him? Do we give him post us with this unit? So I think there's a lot of pieces they're trying to figure out there that are interesting. I like that they finally went to the secret sauce and used Russell Westbrook as a screener for LeBron James, which is going to change things. Not sure who said that, but congrats to that guy. Mm-hmm. But they really have to figure out the spacing with Russ at this point. You know, he's got to stay aggressive, but the spacing right now, it just, there are too many possessions where there's a pick and roll and he is either on the top of the wing or right in the way. But there's been so many possessions where we've seen LeBron and AD and pick and roll on the side. He's standing on the wing with everyone's space, but his man's already at the nail.
Yeah.
And now it's a kick and there's no real closeout to drive either. And it looks different when he's in the corner. You know, when he's on that strong side corner, now the defense has to make a decision. And now he might get a swing, be able to drive by somebody. And that makes a difference. So they've got to find ways to keep him from being one pass away. So that way they can kind of generate the same offense, generate the same pressure, because they're running some good actions, but the defense is just letting it happen. So I'm interested to see if they can kind of figure out how to get him going, how to keep him being aggressive, you know, and pick a roll with him and a big. It's an under right now. Even with him and AD, it's an under right now. So, you know, do you get in more rescreens? Do you try and set the screen a little bit higher so he can get downhill? What kind of things do we do to try and maybe open things up? Because if they can get him at least to a certain level of right and aggressive, now things change. But that also flows to the defense, where they got to be a little bit stronger so they can generate those easy baskets and give themselves some wiggle room.
Let me get the low-hanging fruit out of the way first. I understand wanting to save the AD at 5 minutes to a degree and wanting to start big. You have to do that with a better big than DeAndre Jordan. Like, we just saw this in Brooklyn. That's not the answer. Like, you can't have, you just can't have Russ, AD, and DeAndre Jordan on the floor at the same time. If you want to generate efficient NBA offense in the year of our Lord 2021, those three can't be on the floor at the same time. So if we want to figure out a way to loosen the shackles of the half-court offense a bit, that may be a way to make things easier for everyone. To the spacing point with Russ, I agree with you, and I'm glad that you brought it up with him being one pass away. Like, I think the idea of having Russ one pass away is that if someone rotates over early at the nail, you know, cheat over, then Russ can kind of catch the ball on the move and attack. And he is still pretty good at operating in like those tight areas and getting to the rim and finishing there. But like, it's so cramped. And like, there's just, that's a tight rope to walk. It's a tough needle to thread when doing that. And that's further exacerbated when you want that to be the option for Russ while you also have a traditional five on the floor when they're trying to operate those actions. So like, you're forcing him even more into a phone booth on those looks. So I am with you, like spacing him in the corner and making and allowing him to attack there if they cheat off of him makes a little bit more sense. I will shoot Frank Vogel a little bit of bail in terms of the lineups, because they are missing some ball handling right now. Like, they're still missing Kendrick Nunn, still waiting on Wayne Ellington. Like, once they have more shooters or more players on the wing that they can incorporate, then they can afford to not play the non-shooters more. Like, we won't have to worry about Rondo and Westbrook lineups if you have another guard on the floor that can shoot.
Those aren't going away, pal. Buckle up, buttercup.
But they should, though. But I will say, like, once Frank Vogel has a little bit more lineup, like, the lineups aren't super versatile in part because he doesn't have a bunch of options right now because of health. Now, once everyone's healthy, if we still see some bad lineups, then it's like, okay, Frank, what's the move here? What's happening? But like, he does deserve a little bit of leeway with that.
So I knew you were going to go to DeAndre Jordan, which is why I almost didn't pick the Lakers, but I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Is this a panic button type situation, or is this expected growing pains?
Oh, this is expected growing pains. like the offense itself, I mean, the offense looked pretty bad in the preseason too. Like this is just something they're going to have to work out. Like Russ is just a tricky fit, period. So you just shouldn't also complicate that with having another center on the floor while you're trying to figure out spacing stuff with Russ. But
I swear, this one day you're going to appreciate DeAndre Jordan's game.
Look, man, he...
I'm getting older, so I don't have as much fight, but...
I appreciate what he could do when he was doing it. Clipper DeAndre Jordan, all for it. But he's now the Brooklyn Nets / Los Angeles Laker version of himself. And that person is a tricky fit with the rest of the roster, is, I guess, the nicest way to say it.
All right. Are you concerned about how good Kent Bazemore has to be for this team?
Yeah, they need him to do a lot, particularly defensively. Like, he kind of has to be their point of attack guy right now, which he can do in spurts. But, I mean, this is a remix of the Royce O'Neal thing, where it's like, okay, it's cool if Kent Bazemore can defend well for you, but if, like, he's your most reliable option, or if he's the guy that you need to come through the most for you defensively, you're not in a great space. And I feel like that's where the Lakers are on ball, at least. Like, it's been a lot of Kent Bazemore. Like, Avery Bradley has looked pretty good in his minutes defensively, but I'm not super confident about leaning on him to that degree at this stage of his career either. So I don't know. Like, it's a lot of pressure on Kent Bazemore.
No, that's the one thing that jumped out to me as I was watching them play. It's like, oh, they need him to be really good. Like, and I think he's done a fair job so far, but like, there's little wiggle room for him as far as missing open looks. And there's little wiggle room for him defensively. Like, he kind of has to be that guy. And that's a lot to ask, like, consistently night in, night out. And for this to work, he's kind of got to be that. Like, he's drawn the Steph Curry, Ja Morant assignments.
It's just, and like, Baze has been a pretty streaky guy throughout his career. And so, like, you need the defense so much, you kind of have to ride with him on the night that he's, like, 2 of 8 from three. So not the best spot. Again, once they get a little bit healthier, like I think that's where a guy like Trevor Ariza comes in particular. Once he's back and healthy, they have another guy that they can throw on folks for a few possessions. You don't have to rely on Bazemore to be the prototypical 3-and-D guy for you. Like, if he has an off shooting night, you'll have another guy to throw out there. Also, like, do we just see more Austin Reeves at a certain point?
You trying for a Caruso thing here?
I'm not. But, like, he's looked pretty solid in his minutes. He knows where to be defensively.
I think we do. I think it'll depend. Like, I want to see what they look like when Wayne comes back. Personally.
We are a Wayne Ellington fan club here at the Dunker Spot. But I do think... I mean, one side of the ball is going to influence the other, right? Because, I mean, if they're able to get more efficient offense in the half court, then the other team's pulling the ball out of the basket more. And you don't need – your defense isn't going to be in much flux. They're able to set up a little bit more.
No, yeah, that's the crazy part. There's going to be a lot of fireworks around them. But if they can figure out at least one piece of it, it'll flow to the rest of it. Like, even if they're just, hey, we're really good defensively, we've seen the Lakers have success with that while they figured out the other end. Or even if it's, hey, we're really good offensively. Okay, now you have wiggle room defensively. Or, you know, or you, maybe you get more stops and can run and figure out the offense. So it's going to take some time, but at least they know exactly what they have to fix, I guess what I would say is the positive, as opposed to maybe a scenario where you have some early success and now these warts pop up later. If I'm the Lakers, I might take the struggle early and build, as opposed to trying to figure it out on the fly late in this conference with these teams.
Makes sense. Before we move, I have one question for you.
Ooh, the remix. Question. The remix makes sense. Makes sense now.
We're doing a little bit more remix. This is on a different team. We talked a lot about, we just talked about the Lakers defense. Where are you at on your Portland Blazers?
A mixed bag right now. The effort is there. The activity is better. I'm talking purely defensively right now, which is good. But scheme wise, if you're going to be at the level, they're doing a better job of defending like the initial pick and roll action. Mm-hmm. So like the initial set, hey, we're good. You run one double drag, we've got it locked down, we're good. Now it's the recovery aspect they have to start to master. And the issues that I'm seeing is closeout based. Like, hey, we defended the set, now we get beat, now more help has to come, and now teams are either kicking or driving again, those kind of things. The play outside of the play has been hurting them a lot, mm-hmm. which, hey, the effort's there. I mean, we've seen plays where three guys are flying around to try and get a kick, and that's positive. But at the same time, some of your lineups have to be more solid. And so if you know, Covington's getting beat off the dribble 10 or 12 seconds into the clock, and now your defense has to recover from that, it's tough. And they have a yin-yang lineup-wise where you can tell the defensive energy raises whenever they have Nance and Zeller and Nasir Little out there together. It picks up. But then the other end of the floor, are they still able to generate the same looks? Right. So I'm mostly still positive on what Portland's done. I think offensively they've added some good wrinkles as far as just playing more in the flow. It's less predictable. There's more pace to it. There's more cutting, more handoffs for Nurkic. He still obviously has to be a guy who finishes for them and makes the right plays. If there's going to be two on the ball for Dame, he's got to be able to pick defenses apart and hurt them. And I think CJ McCollum's had a tremendous start to the season. No surprise there. He picked off where he started last year before he got hurt. Mm. And if he can become a guy that now defenses really start to pay attention to, that opens a whole other thing up for Portland. But it's going to be, can they find a rhythm offensively and can they at least find a consistency defensively? Because the defense right now is more active, but that's not necessarily giving consistent results just because of some of the rotations not being able to keep the ball in front, which is kind of some of the issues they've had before. So you want to see growth in that area, and we'll see if they can build on the base.
We shall see. I'm not going to go down the road on Portland's point of attack defense. We've done that on this podcast before. But
hey, man, hey, you got to Dame's getting over some screens now. Just saying, he slandered that man's name for 12 podcasts last year.
Deservedly so for the point of attack defense in particular. But we'll see if the effort keeps up like Portland's going to need for them to. Let's go to the player portion of this. What players have stood out to you so far this year?
Ja Morant, number one for me.
All right.
He's been an absolute monster. I think he scored 37 in the season opener. 30 of those were in the paint. I think it's a low sample, obviously, but if you're averaging 35, 8, and shooting 44 from three on six attempts a game, you're doing something a little bit different. And so what I like is just the evolution of his game without necessarily harming what he does, what he brings to the table. Even if you look at that Lakers game, he was getting in the paint. And like it now it becomes a real, he looks like a player who's picking his spots. And knowing, hey, I can get in the paint, but if you're going to back up, I'm going to take the shot with confidence. And like that's always the different mindset for me. So like I know whenever we talk about guys like Giannis and Ja Morant, it's like, well, yeah, you want him to take that shot. And we always do this with quote unquote non-shooters. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a reason why. Because if those guys go from I'm taking this shot because you guys are leaving me open to I'm taking this shot because I know I can make it, that's a different shift. And Ja appears to be moving more towards that other direction, which is going to take certain things off the table scheme-wise. So if you want to switch and back up, and I'm going to pull this up, now you have a decision to make. Mm-hmm. And now if you have to come up higher, you know, in pick and roll, now that opens everything up for my teammates. I could still get in the paint and finish, and I could still create offense. So that is a big part. Like I've been very impressed because the teams we saw the generation of it last year where teams were backing up on him and he was starting to kind of dip his toe in the water of, hey, I'm going to try and make you pay. Mm-hmm. This year, it just looks different. Like the optics of, I know it's coming and that's fine. I'm going to make you pay every time. And so we'll see if that holds up because if he has that kind of aggressive mindset for this Memphis team, they look different.
Give it to you. He's been, the Laker game in particular was just an absurd display of half-court brilliance for Ja. I mean, had the jumper going, got to the rim going 100 miles per hour, he slowed it. Like, I think that's been the most impressive part for me with Ja Morant earlier in the season. Like, he is doing a better job of pacing himself in the half-court. So I do feel like, you know, the first couple of years of his career, like, it did feel like it was a lot of, I'm going to 100 miles per hour. And, you know, if you duck under, then I'll just chew up that space with my speed and then try to contest the finish at the rim. Or if you go over, then I'm just beating you to the spot and I'm getting up and finishing at the rim, which is fine because he's good enough to do both of those things. But now he's at the point to where he's, I mean, he's always had the pick and roll manipulation, but like now he's really dictating terms. And that's what we saw in the Laker game in particular. Like he got into the intermediate area. You didn't know if the floater was coming. You didn't know if he was tossing the lob. You didn't know if he was going to go with an up and under layup. You didn't know if he's going to go just accelerate on a dime, get into a guy's chest, get to the free throw line. You combine that kind of craft, that kind of timing with, you know, the newfound comfort in this pull-up jumper. He's becoming scheme-proof in a way once he gets that kind of comfortable. Because now, you know, if you go over the screen, he can just beat you to your spot. Or if you rotate over too aggressively, he's going to pick out passes. If you duck under, he's comfortable chewing up space or he'll go to the pull-up. If you switch against him, you can't give him too much space. You pull up, play him too tight, he gets to the rim. And, you know, if he's able to force he's going to be able to force rotations regardless of what scheme you're throwing out there at a certain point. And once you get there, like, Ja's in a different tier at that point. And so I've been very impressed with what I've seen from Ja. First guy on my list was a Cleveland Cavalier because this is the dunker spot. So, of course, we're going off the cuff. Jared Allen has been fun to watch. He is finishing just about everything. He's been incredibly active defensively. They've mixed having him in a drop. We've seen a couple of switches. We've seen him play a little bit higher up in the screen. He's swatting shots. He's getting deflections. He's running big, big pick and rolls. He's on the other side of big, big pick and roll. Like, it's just been a lot of Jared Allen. And it's nice to see him have this kind of start to the season after getting the 5-year, $100 million contract. Well, I've been very impressed with what I've seen from Jared Allen so far.
Is it weird? We spent most of the preseason talking about, boy, I don't know if they can make Evan Mobley and Jared Allen fit, and they both are playing really well, as well as like 19 other bigs for Cleveland.
Yeah, it's been funny. Like, to that point, like, I didn't expect Kevin Love to be playing. Like, I very much thought he was going to get the John Wall and Houston treatment. It was like, you know what? Let's just not do this. Let's try to figure something out.
But like, I dare them to try to do that with Kevin Love.
I mean, that's just the direction I thought it would try. I mean, they've been trying to trade him for what feels like 5 years at this point. So I figured it was going to get to that point. But, you know, again, to your point, like, you trade for Ricky Rubio, that gives him a little bit more incentive to be out there. But no, seriously, that Jared Allen has been incredible.
Good timing as well. The Cavs are up 14 with 2 minutes left in Denver, which feels like a very classic early season loss for Denver. All due respect. But also, we're probably going to talk entirely too much about Cleveland. They might be my Wolves this year.
Ah, I see. And this is reminiscent of when we started the podcast last year, and the first pod was like, hey, Cleveland randomly has a top five defense right now. That's pretty cool. And then Larry Nance Jr. gets hurt, and everything just kind of fell apart from there. But anyway, to that point, I have not watched this game, obviously, because we're potting, but Jared Allen does have 21-16, and he's converted 10 of his 11 shot attempts. And he was shooting about 81% from the field heading into tonight. So my guess is that he's got a lot of slips against Denver's aggressive pick and roll coverage. But, you know, I'll see the film tomorrow. Shout out to Jared Allen.
While we're on the topic, shout out to Ricky Rubio. Again, I like his playmaking, like what he brings to the table with that size. If they're going to play in a drop, that's going to open up things roll-wise. He can operate more with more units and kind of keep them structured. You don't have necessarily the size concerns that you have with their other guards when you're trying to run certain actions or sets. And it just, everything runs a little bit smoother. He's actually making threes. Like, it's Ricky Rubio always tends to thrive in this role. Like, it's crazy.
He's just really freaking good at basketball. Give me the rest of your list.
CJ McCollum has just been an absolute bucket to start this year. And I wanted to just point that out because when he gets in his bag.
Ah, there it is.
I don't know what you do. The step backs, the jab and jays, the fadeaways, the pull-ups, the floaters. He's given all of it this year. Mm-hmm. And that makes things really tough. Because if you're a defense, you say, we'll play a drop against him. And if he keeps shooting like this, you're not going to be able to. And if you're not able to, that opens up a lot for Portland. So I respect to CJ McCollum for his start. I want to throw that out there. Let's see. I'm going to give a quick shout out to Alex Caruso as well. We asked, hey, who would get the slot with the top four in Chicago? And clearly the answer was Alex Caruso. I looked up in their first game, and here he is defending Jeremy Grant down the stretch. And that was, that's where I was like, ah, okay. I see exactly how they feel about him. But now his point of attack defense, screen navigation, he's been in the right places. He just helps kind of fit things together, and it's key. It's clear he's going to be a key part of what they're trying to do. And the last guy I was going to shout out was Will Barton, just for continuing to evolve and actually somewhat make some plays.
I'm glad he's
back.
Get
some assists going. So it's good to see him healthy, and this is a good opportunity for him to continue to grow. So salute to him. I had some rookies, but, you know, can't do that today anymore. Got to tease it.
We will be talking rookies on when the pod release, when the next pod releases on Friday.
We'll get it all. We're what?
Yes, sir. The Dunker Spot twice a week this year. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. The rest of my list, I'll keep things off with Jared Allen. Harrison Barnes has been lighting it up. Three balls falling for him, getting downhill, attacking closeouts. He's been super aggressive. He's really stabilized a lot of what Sacramento wants to do. To that point, just a general Sacramento Kings point, they are run out a lineup of De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and Rashawn Holmes, and I like it. I like it.
I wish they were weirder and they just played their four best players and a big.
You want to see Davion Mitchell, huh?
Actually, you know what? Play Barnes and your four guards and have a blast.
There you go.
But they'll never go there.
At least I hope not. But no, Harrison Barnes been good. A quick shout out to Doug McDermott for trying to make San Antonio's half court offense make sense. He has been the guy that's been scrambling defenses in a way, just because he has so much gravity coming off of screens. I like the way San Antonio has used him in some of their sets. Traditional pin downs, they've used him as a screener. Like, he's been a screener in double drag sets. Like, they run some veer stuff for him. Like, he's been pretty good at it, only shooting well from the field. On the Chicago Bulls front, I like what I've seen from Lonzo Ball in the minutes that I've seen him. And I have to watch more Chicago, get a better feel for him. But he's been everywhere defensively. He's knocking down threes. They've trusted him with more on-ball creation than I thought they would, considering that they have Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan in tow. But Lonzo hasn't looked completely out of place. And if you can nudge him in that direction on top of what he provides, is like, you know, gets a defensive rebound, kick to the head quickly. If a defense is scrambling, he can take a couple of dribbles, get to the rim and keep the chain moving. But if he can handle some actual on-ball reps, like, that takes pressure off for everyone. That adds more utility to him offensively, and that makes the Bulls better. Last guy I had was Hassan Whiteside. It's early season. As someone that has covered Miami extensively and has, you know, I've seen him his entire career. Like, I know what early Hassan Whiteside can look like, but he's worth a shout out right now. He's screening hard. That was my number one question when it was announced that he was signing with Utah Jazz. I'm like, okay, this makes sense. 48 minutes of Gobert and Whiteside rim protection. But how does he fit into their offensive scheme? How does he fit into all the movement, you know, the decoy action to kick off some of their sets? Like, how is Hassan going to incorporate himself there? And through the first week of the season, he's been very good at all the little things, on top of providing the rim protection, on top of providing the rebounding. Like, he has legitimately come off the bench in some games and have changed quarters with the interior impact that he's had on both ends. So, quick early season shout out, like, hopefully for Utah that continues throughout the season. But for now, like, I just wanted to give him a shout.
I like it. I think the Hassan fit has worked a lot better than I thought. And as far as lineup consistency goes, that's big for Utah. And I think it's one of those things where they kind of just know who he is and just go do that. Like, you don't have to do anything else. And hopefully he's maybe gotten to the point in his career where he realizes, okay, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. Probably not, but we'll see.
We shall see. All that front, there are some players that I want to see a little bit more from. Top of the list now is Nick Claxton. Like, the start of the year for him has not been very good. He's still trying to figure out some of the pick and roll chemistry with James Harden early in the season. Defensively is where I'm just concerned. The power matchups, like in the season opener, he got Giannis. Like, I knew that wasn't going to go well because he's just not that type of defender. But, like, some of the switches for him haven't been clean. Like, he's been blown by a little bit more than I would have liked. He hasn't really made an impact on the glass the way that I'd like him to. it's just been a bad start. Again, I'm not giving up on Nick Claxton, still very much president of the fan club. I think he's going to be good long term, but like this start of the season is just not it. Like, I was surprised that he started game one just because of how Brooklyn was kind of shifting the lineups around during the preseason and with them adding the veterans that it did. Like, I just kind of assumed, all right, they're going to start Blake or they're going to start Aldridge, kind of have some size up front and then kind of mix and match early in the season. He got to start from game one. So he had ample opportunity. This is something that I've been clamoring for on the podcast. Like, hey, Clax the guy, Clax is the guy, Clax the guy. Give him more minutes, give him more minutes. I'm concerned about the minutes with the guys they added. He starts, he hasn't produced. It's disappointing. He needs to play better, play with more force. Like, one thing that's still kind of ringing in my mind is during the season opener where Stan Van Gundy is panning his effort on defense. To where he's not closing out hard. He's just kind of in no man's land. Just like, if you're not going to do that stuff, why are you on the floor? Like, that can't like, energy can never be a question for Nick Claxton. If it's, hey, there are just some strength matchups that he can't handle, then the physical is the physical. It is what it is. Effort should never be a question for this guy. So I want Nick Claxton to be better, man. He can be better. We've seen him be better. Tap into it.
I feel like I'm in bizarro world. I don't know what to do with my hands right now, folks. The hashtag is big confused.
I'm big confused. Like, I expected better. Just to reel off the rest of the list, I quite literally want to see more from PJ Washington since he's been out, but it has been a cold start to the season for him. Again, kind of surprised me that he started the year on the bench. I didn't expect Miles Bridges to get the starting role at the four alongside Mason Plumlee. So that was interesting. And PJ Washington has shot poorly to begin the year. Now he's out. Just want to see more. Like, I think things are going to normalize. It's the first week of the season, so no big overreaction, but I want to see a little bit more. OG Anunoby was on my list because the first two games of the season for him were awful offensively. This is my most improved player award pick for the year. Wrote an article over the offseason about how the Raptors need to explore what kind of self-creation potential he has. He's been given those roles, and it's been a lot of predetermined looks offensively. It's been some drives in which, you know, he'll utilize his strength to create a little bit of space, and then the lack of vertical pop shines through. It's been some iffy post play that seemed to have improved tonight in the game against against Chicago. So it's nice to see him bounce back from the poor two games, and now he's looked a little bit better as of late. So he's not firmly on the list at this point, but that was a guy that stood out early. He's like, wait, what's happening here? Why? What are these shot attempts? What are these passing reads? What's going on? So I'm going to be tracking OG. Like, he's, again, I believe in him. I picked him to be most improved player for a reason. I do think a leap is going to come from him. Some early season growing pains for him.
I thought you picked Tyler Hero.
No.
Oh, my bad.
But to that point, the Heat's leading scorer right now. Well, I guess we'll see what the averages update to after Jimmy Butler had the night he had against Orlando tonight. But Tyler Hero's been getting buckets.
Yes, he has.
Anyone from you?
Malik Beasley is my number one. If you're going to be the shooter scorer off the bench, you can't be 2 for 12 to start the season from three. It's not going to work. And then I'd like to see a little bit more from Kyle Anderson. I know they've made a shift role-wise. Mm-hmm. I thought he was really good for them last year. Can he kind of recapture some of that magic and maybe a more limited role? Because I think he is an important piece and he can help that bench unit. But let's see a little bit more from him. Those are my two right now.
All right, fair enough. Let's cap this thing off with our free throw segment, which we just bounce off random thoughts and questions to each other. I have some questions for you, Mr. Steve.
Nikias has never been excited for this segment, and today he is, and I am concerned.
I don't think you have to be concerned. Like, I'm just...
Oh, never mind. Take it back. I was trying to build up drama.
Well, then, I'll start with this one. Who have you enjoyed watching more so far this season, Derrick Rose or Carmelo Anthony?
Oh, that is a really good question. This season, I'll probably have to go Derrick Rose. He's been electrifying the garden at times. A lot of pull-up threes.
Yeah.
A lot of threes. Melo's fun because of the Lakers crowd buzzing every time he catches the ball. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a fun respect they give him, but it's Derrick Rose for me right now.
Can I just say, on a general Knicks note, I have to get used to them, like, taking a bunch of threes on purpose. This is just not something I expected to see from the Tibbs team. And, like, the personnel dictates it, but I just had it kind of in my mind, like, it just wouldn't matter to a certain extent. But they took a bunch of threes in preseason, and that's carried over so far in this season. So, like, it's just weird seeing that happen.
I'm going to branch off what you just said. How hard do you think this team is on Tibbs?
Oh, man. Like, I was concerned for his health at the end of the Celtics game last week, when Evan Fournier gives the random double and then Kemba Walker is basically like doing the Dougie between Marcus Smart and Dennis Schroeder.
This man looks stressed. Now, the good thing I do like is that he's still being himself while also still embracing what his team needs. You know, because I had a halfway concern during the preseason that, like, he was just going to think this team was so good and they weren't doing any of the things that he was just going to get too mad for it to work. And I don't think that's happening because he's letting them play free. They're shooting, they're scoring. But it's like a lot of non-Tibbs type deals, like a lot of threes, a lot of movement. The defense isn't quite where he may want it to be. So I'm just concerned. Like, I feel like this man is just, like, stressed. Like, he just looks at his computer sometimes or watches tape and is like, you know what?
I respect it. We'll be praying for Tibbs during this season, in which he has a lot of offensive firepower to play with this year. It's going to be interesting to see. Why did it take 3 games for Russell Westbrook to start setting screens?
It's a secret sauce, man. You can't show it off right from the start. You got to keep some things in the tuck. You got to hope you don't have to go there.
But why, though? Like, that seems like such an obvious thing for him to add value in the half court when he doesn't have the ball. Because it's not like he's flying off screens like Duncan Robinson. Like,
again, you're hoping to not have to use it. Like, there's things, every coach has things, some pet actions they don't want to have to use unless it's winning time or things just aren't working. And so I'm a little surprised they went to it so early, to be honest with you, but they kind of have to. I mean, that's the thing about coaching in a way. You have a list of things you know will work. You have a list of things you're worried about, and you're hoping you can land somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't, and you just got to try and win.
There you go. Better highlight reactions, Eric Collins or Kevin Harlan?
Ooh, this is a tough one. Pure reactions?
Yes.
Pure reactions. I think you have to go with Eric Collins on this one. The man delivers the enthusiasm and the goods every time. Kevin Harlan is one of the goats. I feel bad either way. I should have just said yes.
Try to steal my answer. Better bridges, Miles or Mikal?
It's still Mikal for me, but it's a lot closer than it was last year.
Yeah. Shout out to Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Miles Bridges.
I love that. I think someone tweeted out it was LaMelo, even though it was Miles Bridges, which should tell you how shocking Miles Bridges player of the week was.
Oh, goodness. What are your thoughts on Dallas's offense?
I knew you were going to land here at some point. I had concerns about both their offense and their defense, and both have shown up. For me, it's a lack of purpose right now. I don't know what they're doing. Like, what are you emphasizing, Luka? Is it pick and roll attack? Is it drive and kick? Are you hoping Jalen Brunson gets in the paint? Are you trying to post up KP? Are you trying to get him at the elbows? Is he spacing? Like, I just don't know what the overall purpose is right now outside of just doing things.
Yeah, like, I came into – I mean, you know how I feel about Jason Kidd as a coach. And so, like, I was not optimistic about what the offense was going to look like. And then some of the quotes come out about, like, how they want to post up KP more. They want to get Luka off the ball. I was like, okay, I don't know what this is going to look like. So I sat down today and I went through all of Dallas's offensive possessions. Would not recommend it for the faint of heart. But
that's how you spent your Monday?
That is how I spent my Monday afternoon, yes. I watched Knicks Magic And then I went through all of the Mavericks. Anyway, we're getting way too deep behind the scenes at this point. At any rate, I came away. One, I don't want to see Dorian Finney-Smith post-ups ever. That's just not a thing that I need to see. Like, I understand, hey, Trae Young's guarding him, let's go after him. But, like, the Mavericks kick off the Hawks game with Tim Hardaway Jr. running double drag and it flowing into a Dorian Finney-Smith post-up. And so I watched those two possessions in particular. I was like, okay, so I get it. Luka as a screener is interesting because you can have him pop out, or if they're switching that screen, then you have, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr.'s defender on Luka now, and that's an immediate mismatch. Right? So, like, I get it. But, like, Luka's not really screening. So it's just like, what is that really doing? And then for the possession to end in the Dorian Finney-Smith post-up, it's just like, who wins any of this? Like, you are feeding – you're just – you're making the Hawks happy at this point. But anyway, the overarching thing is I came away like, I don't super mind what the Mavericks are doing scheme-wise. The bigger issue for me is their personnel. Because I just don't think they have a rim pressure guy they can trust outside of Luka. And in order for any of their secondary guys to really get downhill, you need... one, you need their actions to be running 100 miles per hour, which is where, like, you know, Luka as a screener sounds good in theory, but, like, he's not setting the screen, and then he's just kind of floating 28 feet from the basket and just standing still. It's very Harden-esque. It's very, you know, first half of the season Trae Young-esque, in which he's just not doing anything. So, like, you're not creating an advantage there. And if you're not getting the advantage created there, then it's just like, okay, why is Tim Hardaway Jr. initiating offense? Why is shout out to the random Kristaps Porzingis pick and roll that happened in the Raptors game. But, like, why are any of these things happening if you're not creating an advantage? So, like, the good news for Dallas is that they can just simplify things and just go back to the formula last year. It was like, okay, we're just going to give the ball to Luka. We're going to spread it out. He's going to churn out 45 wins by himself because he's an offense onto himself. Like, I don't think that's what they want to land on long term, because you know what the ceiling of that is in the postseason. Like, he gets tired out. But I don't know. Like, I'm not at red alert with Dallas right now.
All right. I like it. Yeah, a quick question for you.
Okay.
Name this player. 28 field goal attempts, 0 assists. Who did it?
Oh, Jesus. 28 field goal attempts, 0 assists? Can I get a division?
Southeast.
Southeast. 28 field goal attempts, 0 assists. Does Cam Reddish have an assist?
That's a good question. I'm going to look that up while you make a guess.
Okay.
It's not him, though.
Okay. It's not Cam Reddish. Oh, man. 28 shot attempts, 0 assists. No, DeAndre. I don't think it's not a hog. It can't be a hog.
Cameron just has 2 assists, by the way.
Okay. See, I'm not too far off, then. Okay. I don't know.
Hero Ball. Tyler Hero.
Tyler Hero does not have an assist this year.
No. It was in one game.
Oh,
Indiana game. 28 field goals, 0 assists.
Oh, okay. See, I watched the game. See, you should have specified. You set me up. You threw me a bomb at the end of the shot clock.
Way more fun that way.
Okay. Shout out to Tyler Hero, I guess. That's all I have for you. What do you have?
Who's your secret favorite team to watch that you don't necessarily tell anybody? This is a difficult question for you because you always tell people the Magic. But I'm curious. Do you have a team that you like? You watch and you're like, think I like them. Mine's the Wiz. The Wiz and the Kings.
The Wiz and the Kings. That's a good... Like, OKC has been so bad. Like, that would be my pick, I guess. But, like, I can't even get there right now. Just because it's been... Josh Giddey's... we're going to save the massive rookie talk for the next pod. But, like, Josh Giddey's been fun. Shea's been fun in spurts. And, like, everyone else has just kind of been like, this is kind of tough right now.
I'll give you my answer. It's Detroit.
You like watching Detroit?
I always end up watching Detroit. I don't even know why.
I feel you. I guess the early season answer for me is Orlando right now, just because I've seen more of the games than a lot of the contenders at this point. And again, that's going to be fleshed out a little bit more on the next pod since they have a bunch of rookies. But quick shout out to Cole Anthony, who is now the best rebounding guard in the NBA, apparently. That's a fun development. But no, like I like watching Terrence Ross just run around stagger screen. Can I? That's one thing I want to point out. Since I watched Knicks Magic today.
Oh, when Terrence Ross ran around for an entire quarter and destroyed the Garden.
Yes, and it's like they ran the literal same set like four or five times in a row and got a good shot every single time. And I know Tibbs had to be losing his mind.
Told you that man's stressed.
Those are my Orlando Magic thoughts for today.
All right. Desmond Bane or Melton?
That's not fair. I'll go Bane right now.
The correct answer was Desmond Bane. What is New Orleans doing?
Absolutely.
Okay. Who do you believe in more in their new home? Kelly Oubre or Kyle Kuzma?
You know what? I like Kuz in this one. He seems a lot more comfortable getting on ball reps. He's playing more freely.
Good. I'm glad. It's been a good fit for him. Derrick Rose or Kemba Walker?
I mean, D-Rose has thoroughly outplayed him so far.
Do you feel better about the Spurs?
Not really. Like I shouted out Doug McDermott, but also the fact that they're relying on Doug McDermott is kind of the point of the half court offensive issues that I had.
Man said they couldn't score and they've been scoring. Anyways, we'll get back to that one. Are you concerned about how much you've agreed with Charles Barkley and Kendrick Perkins over the last 4 to 6 weeks?
Yes, very concerned. Like I'm so mad that I have these takes and it's just like I hear them paired up. It's like I know that you didn't get to this conclusion the way that I did. And I'm sure that comes off as very disrespectful since one's a Hall of Famer, the other is Kendrick Perkins. But, like, I don't know. Like, I still feel really good about, like, my Bucks title pick. But, like, also they're on that side. So I'm just like, okay, wait. Are we sure?
Evolution comes to all of us. Is Seth Curry ever going to get his flowers?
Let's give him his flowers right now. Seth Curry is one of the five best shooters in the NBA. The on-ball creation has gotten better. He's been Philly's second best player this year behind Joel. Is that fair?
Tyrese Maxey slander?
No. I do not think Tyrese Maxey has been as good as Seth Curry this year.
It's been Seth Fleury this year.
There it is.
Got to step my pun game back up. Lacking.
It's week one. We'll get back into the group.
What are you going to do when Kevin Durant comes after you on Twitter?
Showcase my vaccination status, apparently. That seems to be the rebuttal that works. So shout out Dragonfly Jones. Fantastic Twitter exchange.
Forever and always. That man is magician. Dwight Howard or Thanasis, who fouls harder?
That's a very creative question. Like, I think it's Dwight, who also fouls his own team, so I think he gets the edge by default.
Does Thanasis play like a running back?
Yes.
Is Rui Hachimura the next Thanasis Antetokounmpo?
Thank you for listening to Oh my goodness. That's how you cap it off. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe to us if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can find Steve at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all on Friday.
Mike Malone is so mad right now.